Among a native Australian people, it is said, when the rice crop shows sign of failure, the women go into the rice field, bend down, and relate to it the history of its origins. The rice, now understanding why it is there, begins again to grow. Aha, I thought, as I read this passage. Such is the importance of stories. This is why I write. I don't start a book by thinking of the listener or the reader. I just climb inside a story and write it over and over again until I know what it's about. Then I try to write as clearly and honestly as I can. But when the book is finished and I hold it in my hands, I can see myself bending down to whisper it into the ear of a child. You are there too. You writers, illustrators, booksellers, publishers, and librarians, all whispering away. And the child, now understanding, begins to grow. This is why I write. So children can begin to grow, to see beyond the edges of their own experience. There are other reasons also why I write, not quite so philosophical and high-minded. I write because it's something I can do at home barefoot, because I can lie on my bed and read and call it work, because I am always making up stories in my head anyway, and I might as well make a living from them, because I am 54 years old and I just figured out that I am not immortal. Like Jacqueline Woodson, I want to leave a sign of having been here. I have ideas, opinions, things to say, and I want to say them before I go. I want to take sides, to argue for my own passions and values and beliefs. I have questions I want to explore, in an attempt to find, with Herb Gardner, the subtle, sneaky, important reason I was born a human being and not a chair. But maybe, most of all, I write because when I relax and trust myself, it feels so right to be a writer. Writing is my niche, my home, my place in the world, a place I finally found just as Alice, the midwife's apprentice, found hers, and in my next book, Lucy Whipple finds hers. And my place is full of words, of settings real and pretend, of people I have never met but know as well as I know myself, of events that never happened but have changed me in the imagining. This is why I write. I write for the child I was and the child I still am. Like countless other lucky adults, I have much in common with children. We daydream, wonder, exaggerate, ask what if, and what we imagine sometimes is more true than what is. We like to play with squishy things, mud, clay, dough, words, and we make stuff out of them. We like kids, animals, rain puddles, and pizza, and dare to love silly things. We don't like Brussels sprouts, the dentist, or books with great long passages of description, flashbacks, or dream sequences. We like happy endings, or at least hope. And we love stories. There is a Hasidic story. There is always a Hasidic story. Some followers go to their rabbi. Rebbe, they ask, what is heaven like? In heaven, answers the rabbi, they sit at a table with all sorts of delicacies and good things. The only problem is, their arms do not bend. And what is hell like? In hell, they sit at a table with all sorts of delicacies and good things. The only problem is, their arms do not bend. Then, Rebbe, what is the difference between heaven and hell? Ah, my children, said the rabbi, in heaven, they feed each other. Writing for me is us feeding each other, writer and reader. 54-year-old me and the young people who pick up my books. Me whispering in their ears and them talking back. They read and I am nourished, and my book becomes something richer and more profound than ever I hoped. After Catherine Called Birdie was named a Newbery Honor Book last year, A number of interviewers remarked that I had come out of nowhere. I didn't. I always knew where I was. I just hadn't started whispering to the rice yet. As a child, I wrote constantly, but never thought about growing up to be a writer. I come from a working-class Chicago-area family that loved me dearly, but often didn't quite know what to make of me. I used to imagine I was the only child ever kidnapped from gypsies and sold to regular people. I didn't know writing was a job, something real people did with their lives, something like being a secretary or a salesman or a school crossing guard like my grandpa. With school, writing became hard work, homework, assignments, term papers. Like many other students, I procrastinated, suffered, and counted words. Besides, my greatest passion was not for writing, but for reading. Uncle Wiggily, Little Lulu and Donald Duck, The Story of Ferdinand, Rufus M., Homer Price and Caddy Woodlawn, Blue Willow and Strawberry Girl, The Bobbsey Twins, Kristen Lovren's Daughter, Microbe Hunters, Triumph Over Pain, The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich, Mad Magazine. We didn't own many books. In school, I suffered through Basel readers. But before long, I discovered the library. Then chances were, if I could reach it, I would read it. Writers, I began to think, were people who had all the answers. I didn't have all the answers. I didn't even know all the questions. So I stopped writing. For a very long time. And for years endured the painful search for a place to belong. Some times were great, some empty and awful, but there was always something missing. Finally, the day my daughter began filling out college applications, I sat down to write, for myself. I still didn't have the answers, but I began to know some of the questions. Why? What for? What if? How would it be? Writing was still hard work, hard to begin, hard to stop. But it also became a passion, and that made all the difference. To sum it up, Ray Bradbury said, if you want to write, if you want to create, you must be the most sublime fool that God ever turned out and sent rambling. I wish for you a wrestling match with your creative muse that will last a lifetime. I wish craziness and foolishness and madness upon you. May you live with hysteria and out of it make fine stories, which finally means, may you be in love every day for the next 20,000 days, and out of that love, remake a world. I read that and I said, yes. And out of my passion came Catherine Called Birdie, my first book. I wrote it despite my own doubts and the don'ts of others, because I needed to find out about things, about identity and responsibility, compassion and kindness and belonging and being human in the world. How could I learn them if I didn't write about them? Sometime during the process of writing Catherine, I thought of the title, The Midwife's Apprentice. I liked it, so I made a file. I wrote, The Midwife's Apprentice, on the tab. Inside, I wrote on a slip of paper, possible title, Midwife's Apprentice, and I filed it. After I mailed Catherine off, I sat for hours looking at that file. I had a title. The research I had done for Catherine gave me a firm place to stand. I knew that village and those people so well. But I had no story, until finally I saw, in the unrelieved darkness of a medieval dawn, a homeless child sleeping on a dung heap, longing for a name, a full belly, and a place in the world. Although we were separated by geography, circumstances, and hundreds of years, I knew this girl and her longing for a place, her feelings of unworthiness, her fear of trying and failing, and her fragile confidence. The story poured out of me, the girl rising from her nest in the dung heap, the cat escaping from the bag, Alice coming clean and shining from the river, the blossoms bursting forth on the trees, a celebration of rebirth and renewal as Alice grew from waif to midwife's apprentice. Still, Dinah Stevenson, my editor and often pipeline to reality, reminds me that I sent the manuscript to her with a note that said, "I don't know if this is a book or a writing exercise. What do you think?" After we decided it was indeed a book, and it was written and published, I worried about Alice the way I would about the plain younger sister of a popular girl. The midwife's apprentice was quieter, more subtle than Catherine. Would anyone love Alice as I did? Would anyone even find her among the thousands of books published each year? What about the many images of Alice being born, or the way she is like the cat, the importance of her owning a name, or her profound wounds and prosaic but effective tenacity? Would anyone notice or care? Would adults think her story too disturbing for children, and children think it too serious and dull? I took the risk and whispered the story of Alice. And so many people have listened, noticed, and cared. Children ask me who Alice is. Is she me or someone I know? Alice is Alice, a girl with no place in a world all about place, a girl who has to give birth to herself. And I am Alice, who becomes truly alive only when she learns to smile and sing and tell stories to the cat. You are Alice, if only in the way that all of us are, born cold and nameless, in search of a full belly and a place in this world. And Alice is every child who is parentless, homeless, and hungry, who lives on the edges of our world, who is mocked or excluded for being different. With the exception of this lovely, noisy bunch of people down front here, I have in my life loved books more than anything. Writing is my way of honoring and sharing that. "There's worms in apples and worms in radishes," says Arvella Whipple in my newest book. The worm in the radish, he thinks the whole world is a radish. Those of us who read books know the whole world is not a radish. It is a crabbing boat in Chesapeake Bay, the walls of medieval Krakow, 21st century Zimbabwe, and the place where the wild things are. It is Narnia, and Brooklyn, and Gold Rush, California. It is the glory of the whirligigs in May's garden, the lonely anger of Heidi's grandfather, the warmth of the wind blowing through the willows, and the terror of a Nazi death camp. As children are what they eat and hear and experience, so too they are what they read. This is why I write what I do. About strong young women who in one way or another take responsibility for their own lives. About tolerance, thoughtfulness, and caring. About choosing what is life-affirming and generous. About the ways that people are the same and the ways they are different, and how rich that makes us all. Catherine Patterson, whose books, both fiction and nonfiction, have inspired me more than I can say, wrote, "It is not enough to simply teach children to read. We have to give them something worth reading, something that will stretch their imaginations, something that will help them make sense of their own lives and encourage them to reach out to people whose lives are quite different from their own." I remember an 8-year-old Karen, shy, dreamy, and in love with books, running home from the library, flinging herself, still in coat and woolen leggings, onto the floor to read Lois Lenski's Cotton in My Sack. And I remember realizing with a pain in my heart that this book about sharecroppers in Arkansas was not a fairy tale with trolls hiding under the bridge and a guaranteed happily ever after. These were real people who had lives and dreams and troubles so real and so different from mine. I came back from the cotton fields of Arkansas to suburban Chicago a little different myself, a little changed. The goal of every storyteller, a Russian poet wrote, consists of fostering in the child, at whatever cost, compassion and humanness, this miraculous ability of man to be disturbed by another being's misfortune, to feel joy about another being's happiness, to experience another's fate as your own. Such is the importance of stories. This is why I write. And what can be more important in this world? Although I write my books upstairs, alone except for an elderly cat with a gleaming patch of white in the dusty orange of her fur, I know that writing, like living, is a communal act. For helping me to this moment, I would like to thank Dinah Stevenson and everyone at Clarion, the world's greatest publishers, for their genius, their faith, and their devotion. Ginny Sow and the Harper Trophy folks for their enthusiasm, support, and all those flowers. James Levine, Dan, Ariel, and Melissa for doing what agents do so well and with such goodwill. Jack Haley, my West Coast agent, who generously shares his investigations, inspirations, and exuberant friendship. Trina Shard Hyman, for using her talent to make my girls live and breathe. The Newbery Committee, for seeing what I was trying to do with Alice and honoring it. The Lipskys, who were kings in Poland, especially my parents, Arthur and Loretta Lipsky, for loving me and giving even when they didn't have. Francis and Alvin Cushman, who have taught me the meaning of generosity, honesty, and humanity. My daughter Leah, who shows me every day how strong and independent, yet gentle and compassionate a young woman can be. And most of all, Philip, my husband, inspiration, love slave, and most ardent fan, who always believed I could do it. No matter what it was, he believed I could. So usually, I did. It was Philip who slept with the phone by his pillow on January 21st, and so answered it at dawn. He handed it to me, whereupon I heard, sounding like the voice of God in a medieval mystery play, "Karen Cushman, this is Mary Beth Dunhouse from the American Library Association in San Antonio, Texas. What does one say to that?" I said, "Yes." And it was the right response. Yes to writing without having all the answers. Yes to Ray Bradbury and Alice and the Newbery Committee. Yes to compassion and humanness, to being disturbed and feeling joy, to life and passion and love and remaking a world. God made people, says Elie Wiesel, because he loves stories. Such is the importance of stories.